It's good to be back talking WRC, which is what we're going to be talking. We're also going to be talking the new Skoda R5, which again caused a little bit of a stir on Twitter the other week when we were talking about that. And we're going to have somebody join us as a guest host, Ryan Champion, who's ace, by the way. He used to do WRC TV and he's done various things, and he's going to be a very, very, very good guest host. But so we're going to be doing some bits and pieces of news. We're also hopefully, and I've just had a little message just ping through now, we're also going to have Rich Milner from the famous grizzly faced Rich Milner from M Sport, who's going to be joining us to let us know what's going on over in the service park. So we're going to be probably catching up with Rich probably in about 5 or 10 minutes, but we're going to have our guest host going to be joining us very, very shortly. But again, thank you for getting involved in Twitter. It does make a hell of a difference to us, the whole Twitter thing. And so without further ado, I'm going to find our guest host. I'm going to line him up. I'm going to have him there. It's all calm. We're all good in the studio. And by the way, how about that? The question, or rather the thoughts on what was going on. I think that's caused a bit of a stir, and there's been a hell of a tweet as well about what's gone on there. But before we go any further discussing that, I'm going to bring in Ryan Champion. Ryan Champion, welcome to Total Rally.
Good evening.
I've already done your kind of your intro, so you are as a guest host, but I will big you up for about 30 seconds. I will say that obviously you're a former British rally star. You did drive for Mitsubishi UK, you did drive for Ford, you have won numerous Group N rallies all over the UK, and also a cheeky one over in Barbados, which must have been a headache to go all the way over there to do a rally. And you also used to do WRC TV, and you now are involved with this wonderful, wonderful Tuthill Porsche as well, because I see you knocking about with those guys.
That's true, yes.
But other than that, life's quiet.
Yeah, very quiet.
Well, in the capacity as guest host, we always do things in chronological order, and it's news. And now, the first piece of news which I want to come to is we discussed it off-air before. I don't know whether you've been following what's going on Twitter, but by all accounts, and we're not entirely sure how valid this tweet was, but we did retweet it, and it's come from, I'm not even going to try and pronounce, but somebody, let's just have a little look, I don't know if you're following it, but apparently a Kubica fan anyway, saying according to their info, A-Style has decided to end the cooperation with Kubica.
Yeah, okay, sounds like an interesting one. I mean, we talked about it a little bit earlier on. It's obviously stemmed from their success together last year. Kubica had a challenging year last year, and then when they put their heads together, everything seemed to go well for them. But as soon as they've moved to WRC level together, everything seems to have fallen apart again, doesn't it?
Well, this isn't confirmed. I'm just going on their Twitter handle now. It's in Polish, surprise, surprise. And if you listen to this programme, you know I struggle with names, even like Ryan's, to be perfectly honest with you. So I'm not going to attempt it, but it's been retweeted a few times. We're not saying this is fact, by the way. This is what's being tweeted. We've done a retweet on it. We're open-minded to it. But one thing Ryan and I did discuss earlier was the physicalities of getting your car and the equipment to Rally Argentina and having it in the service park and then deciding not to do the rally. It's one of those ones. I think Ryan even did a bit of research, didn't you, Ryan, which car it was?
Yeah, I was just looking. There's a Czech website that many people will know that's really good for looking at the history of rally cars, and the car that Kubica was using this year was the A-Style car that he did the rally in Italy, he did the Monza rally sprint with, etc. last year. So it was the Italian team's car, which I think started life with M Sport in 2012. So it had done a few rallies, and it seems that they've had a little bit of unreliability with it as well.
I know they've thrown a few bits and pieces at it, especially during the Monza rally sprint and things like that, but it might be a little bit unfair to ask the question, but I had a cheeky text message from Rich Milner before, so we're going to have Rich Milner join us just from views from the service park and what the stages are looking like on Rally Argentina. But before we crack on into Rally Argentina, you got involved in a little bit of a debate before on Twitter with this Skoda R5, which is a stunning bit of kit. Now, a very good, well, isn't Neil Simpson still a mate of yours, isn't he?
Yes.
Now, the article that's gone out today, which is a wonderful article as ever by David Evans in a Motorsport News publication over here in the UK, has him and Raymond Bauschleider, I've probably mispronounced that, haven't I, at the front of the queue, pretty much, to get a customer spec car. Now, I don't know, have you spoke to Neil recently at all?
I have not actually about buying an R5, but I know he put his hand up and he sold his Super 2000 car. That was a car that Marty McCormack used on the circuit of Ireland, and I think Marty's planning to use that for the rest of the year. So I knew he'd sold the car with a view to getting an R5 car, but obviously as the article said, with the success that the Super 2000 cars had, there's going to be quite a few national teams looking to get their hands on them to continue the success that the previous generation car had.
Well, you've drove lots of things, Ryan, and you know you've done lots of testing and stuff like that. Have you drove a Super 2 car?
I've driven a couple of Super 2000 cars, yeah, but not an R5 cars yet. But I guess the obvious advantage with an R5 car is increased torque, because you just have to see a Super 2000 car on a hairpin to see how little torque they have. And even off the start line, a real pig to get off the start line, it's pretty much maximum revs and dump the clutch. That's the only way to get them off the line, because they have reasonable power, but they just don't have any torque. And I'm sure the R5 car is a lot quicker and probably a little bit easier to drive because of that.
Well, the reason why I want to ask you about that is I've known people who've got Super 2 cars. I've known, obviously, a couple of people over at, like I said, Mellors, and I know people at M Sport and things like that. And as I say, they've kind of moved down the pecking order almost now, because obviously newer technology comes in, it naturally happens. But I never hear anybody saying that they're a cheap car to run, but I keep on being told that an R5 is a cheap car to run. Now, cheap to you and I is probably a very different thing to what the people are saying it to me, but apparently they're a lot more cost effective to run as well.
Yeah, I mean, the whole ethos behind the regulations is that they use common parts where possible, obviously things like an off-the-shelf transmission, but they tried that with Super 2000, but it's things like the uprights, interchangeable, and even the sensors. I think that was one of the big things on a World Rally car that made the World Rally cars a fortune. Everything had its own sensor, whereas I understand with R5 regulations, any sensors, be it a throttle position sensor or a boost sensor, whatever it is, it has to be an off-the-shelf part from a manufacturer. And that's one of the ways that the costs have been cut significantly.
I'm always sceptical, because whether it takes me back to days, and again, I know you drove these cars, the likes of Super 1600s and stuff like that, where supposedly all the costs are capped and everything else. And I remember, I know you had an expensive time, and I remember Simon Hughes, another big mate of mine, who had probably one of the first privately run Clios, I think, in Europe, and it was just telephone numbers for everything, and it was all meant to be capped at 100,000.
I think the problem was, and I'm sure the problem is, the costs are capped to a degree, but certainly in the Super 1600 days, Ford probably were one of the few manufacturers that actually tried to stick to the regulation with the Puma. So certainly, like you say, with the Clio and the Peugeots at the time, yes, you could buy a car for the cost cap, but if you wanted a competitive car, then there was a reasonable upgrade kit that you had to buy. And I think actually if you want to buy a competitive R5 car, this €130,000 ceiling, or whether it's £108,000, so that ceiling's probably not particularly true if you want a winning car. There's always upgrades.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the other interesting thing which I read, because obviously M Sport is a very different animal. Obviously, it's a commercial venture. Obviously, they have to sell cars in order to compete at WRC. And Malcolm has done a fantastic job. And I'm not just saying this because obviously we're going to have Rich join us. I think that what he's done is absolutely phenomenal. Skoda's attitude is very much, and I think this is where possibly your thoughts stem from, it's very much a factory-based R5 with some customers. That's the way they're going to do it. They're going to run it very much as a factory car, which kind of led to the debate on Twitter earlier about, obviously, you know, it's part of the Volkswagen family. This was the thing that was going around on Twitter as well the other week about the two brands not competing. But as you correctly pointed out, Volkswagen don't tend to hang around once they've nailed it. And they're not far away from actually nailing it, are they?
No, that's right. You know, you look at what they did with the Dakar program, previous motorsport programs, and ultimately Volkswagen dominate the World Rally Championship for 3 years, which, let's face it, it looks like they're going to. What benefit a fourth or fifth year? There's all these rumours of the Volkswagen group going into Formula One, be it here with the Audi brand or maybe even with the Volkswagen brand, but ultimately, if they're in Formula One with one of the big brands, then you know, it wouldn't be a surprise to see that's where the focus of the competition is, and then that would be an ideal open door for Skoda to move into.
As I say, I think we put out on Twitter as well after you tweeted that, and thank you for tweeting that, because that's how you ended up as a guest host tonight, as I said to you before. The infrastructure is already there. You know, Skoda now is not the Skoda of old. You know, you and I remember when, you know, when they were running the Octavias, for instance, and a mutual friend of ours, Ollie Marshall, went over and bought all the Octavias when they moved over to the Fabia WRC, and you know, that Skoda Motorsport isn't the Skoda Motorsport of today. You know, I remember hearing tales of when they went to get the Octavias where not one Octavia was exactly the same. Didn't you drive one of those, actually?
Never actually on a rally. I did drive one in a test, but never actually drove one on a rally. But I think that in itself was some of the WRC regulations. You know, they were really trying to keep moving the car along. I mean, there was a lot of ProDrive technology in the Octavia, and some of that evolved into the Fabia, but all the transmission initially on the Octavia was a ProDrive transmission, and a lot of ProDrive suspension parts as well. But they were constantly trying to keep up with technology, whereas at least with R5 from, you know, somebody like Skoda, they can buy a lot of the parts off the shelf. So a lot of that cost is controlled, the development costs. But nonetheless, we've seen quite a degree of unreliability from some of the R5 cars early on. So, yes, the parts were off the shelf, but as we've seen from, you know, the PSA group, both the Peugeots and the Citroëns have struggled a bit early on in terms of reliability.
Do you think it was canny of Skoda to hang back? Because, you know, I think the head of Skoda Motorsport was even quoted today saying that he actually felt sorry for Peugeot and the cooling issues that they went through with, because obviously you can't physically change the front of the car. And they, you know, he watched from afar how other manufacturers and mainly Peugeot with the 208 T16, how they'd struggle to get, you know, the cooling package working. And obviously, you know, they're, you know, the Skoda R5 must be, that's got to be over 12 months behind the Peugeot and 12 months behind the Fiesta. Is that fair? Would you say it was about that?
Yeah, I guess some of it ties in with the production of the road car, doesn't it? So they, you know, they had a little bit of grace, if you like, in terms of development of the car because of the introduction of the road car. But yes, I mean, absolutely, you would assume they've learnt lessons from the struggles that other manufacturers have had. Having said that, if you look at recent problems in Formula One, it's not like Honda learnt from Mercedes and Renault, is it? So, they have had longer to look at it. And yes, I would assume with a lot of the components been standardised, I think the car would be pretty good straight off the block. But, you know, let's wait and see.
Absolutely, absolutely. But obviously this weekend, it's Rally Argentina. Now, I'm kind of at a juncture here, Ryan. Right, and as a guest host, you've got some say on what goes on here. Do we grab Rich Milner now, who is in the service park, and just find out what's going on and just pick his brains? Well, should we do that?
Pretty interesting, I think. Yeah,
I think we should do that. Let's just grab him now. He says.
But Argentina is an interesting one. You know, it's always been a great rally, and it's nice to have one of the classics of the WRC as well. I think enduring images of the water splashes in Argentina have just run through rallying history. And some of the stages, you've got classic stages. El Condor used as the power stage this weekend. You know, it's been a stage in Rally Argentina for literally years and years now, and a really incredible stage. named after the condors that are spotted on it, and it's that stage with the iconic image of Argentina with the moonscape, really, for want of a better expression, all those huge rocks that the rally cars have to pick the way through, and often foggy in there as well. So, you know, it's great that these classic stages are still in the WRC.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I've been looking at some of those images today, and we're hoping now we're going to get the man that is, I called him Grizzly earlier, and it might be a little bit out of order, but hopefully Rich Milner's now joining us on the line. Rich?
Hello.
Rich Milner, the man we've nicknamed Grizzly Adams. Welcome to Total Rally again.
How are you doing?
We're really good. You've got myself and Ryan Champion this evening.
Good evening.
Hi, Ryan.
Listen, we wanted to speak to you because we wanted the bird's eye view. I assume you're in the service park now.
I am, yeah. I am indeed.
So, what's the general feeling around? Well, firstly, we'll do M Sport. How are your boys? Are they happy now? Recce's done and everything else?
Yeah, I think they are happy, but it's been a lot tougher than they expected. There was a lot of rain damage to the stages in February, and it's meant a lot of the roads have been washed away to the point where they're actually. They've cancelled some of one of the long stages. They cancelled the first 14 kilometres of one of the longer stages because it's so rough. So I think it's going to be very tough rowing on the cars on the cruise, and that's what seems to be what everybody's saying. So they're happy enough the recce's finished now, but I think there's going to be some more added challenges compared to the previous rallies we've been here.
Yeah, Ryan was just talking about some of the classic stages there. Obviously, El Condor is obviously the power stage and things like that. Is the feedback from the drivers when they go coming back from those classic stages, though, the ones that they really want to do, or are they looking a little bit rough with the rain?
I think the El Condor stage is like that other classic iconic stages in the rally, but they're all kind of aware that, yeah, it would be nice to get there on Sunday for the power stage and be in a good position, but it's going to be so different to what I used to, these roads. I mean, they really are quite bad. One of the guys that goes, our tyre guy, George, that goes through all the stages before the rally, was even struggling to get through some of the stages in a big pickup truck. So it is pretty bad conditions, but it's going to be an interesting one to watch, proper what rally is about, a bit of survival as well as speed.
I was just about to say, it's probably going to be one of the slower ones, Ryan. Obviously, you've got a little bit of background with tyres as well. Have you got anything you want to ask Rich?
Well, I was just interested if George Black finds it difficult going. George has seen all the stages on the WRC dozens of times, so if he finds it difficult going, then the conditions must be tough. But obviously, Rich, it's one of the WRC events that really can be affected by weather. You know, the heavy rain, as you said, makes the stages rough, and fog is also an issue some years as well. Has there been any of the fog in the last few days?
No, well, actually, since we've been here, it's been pretty good. Nice and warm. You've got to remember, we're a month different to what we normally are when we're here, because of Portugal being moved. Portugal being moved in between, so we're actually a slightly different climate as usual, but at the moment the weather forecast is looking quite good for the week. It's just that the damage to the roads is obviously quite not possible to repair in time for the rally now, so that's going to be the main challenge, I think.
And I saw on some pictures on Twitter that there were still some quite bad mud holes in places. Obviously they've cut some of that out, but I guess from what you're saying, some of that still exists in...
Yeah, the mud holes were actually on that first 14K of the stage they'd cut out, so they were a real concern to them. But then there's the other areas where the water's just washed away to the bedrock. And I mean, George and a few of the others are comparing it to almost Safari or Acropolis, is the last time they saw this kind of, you know, these kind of state of the stages. So it's going to be quite interesting because we're not used to, you know, especially the first three events this year so far are quite fast and haven't been so rough. So it's going to be
very
different to see what happens.
Yeah, so quite an endurance event, which we haven't seen too much of on WRC. Like you said recently, it's getting the car to the finish could be quite an important factor.
Yeah, I think it's going to be key, and especially tomorrow morning, the first 18 days of the stage tomorrow morning are probably the roughest on the rally. So that's going to be one where all the boys are kind of saying that it could be. That could be a bit of an outcome, and the longer stages tend to make it a little bit harder to gain positions, because people can take so much time out of each other in the long stages. So it really is going to be get your head down from the word go, but without pushing too hard that you do any damage, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. It just with regards to the surface and everything, I know it seems like a bit of a silly question, but has anybody suffered punctures on the recce?
We haven't had any punctures on the recce, no. I mean, I think a lot of the guys are writing new notes, so, and they're obviously limited on the speed anyway, so they can't go too crazy. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see some punctures on the rally. There's quite a few guys using different tyre manufacturers as well, including DMAC and Pirelli, so it's going to be interesting to see which one holds up the best, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if there were punctures within it. We're certainly looking at taking two spares regardless of the loop of the stages, the length, because of the conditions of the stages. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, Rich, I only borrowed you for 5 minutes. If we can just ask you a question, and don't feel like I'm dragging into our discussion at all. But is Robert Kubica knocking about? Because obviously, there's been the announcement was made a few hours back that he's actually pulled his entry and the car and everything's there. Is he in the service park or is he just not there?
The car and the team are here, but he never came. I spoke to him a few days ago, and he made the decision then that he wasn't coming. So, unfortunately, it's not great for the sport, and I think a lot of people would like to see him here, but he wants to just get things right, and they're doing well with a few issues, so he wants to restructure, like you said, and get it back going, and come back to Portugal ready to go again. So, a bit disappointing, but, you know, it's one of those things with the cost and the busy calendar we have, it's a difficult one to get right all the time.
Absolutely. Listen, Rich, before we lose you, because we are drifting a little bit there, thanks so much for joining us from the service park. We wish your boys all the very best. Have a safe rally, and we'll catch you up with you when you get back.
No problem. Thanks very much.
Thanks for joining us, Rich. Cheers, mate.
Cheers. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey now. Bye-bye.
I think that was, to be fair, I thought I wasn't expecting him even to answer that much, but I think that kind of tells the tale itself, doesn't it?
Well, I think it sounds like that it's maybe been Kubica's decision rather than the team. And, you know, ultimately he's a competitive guy, isn't he? Not only competitive. This guy's been at the top of Formula 1. He hasn't just been in Formula 1. He's been at the top of Formula 1. And, you know, he can't be happy in not finishing rallies. And he probably accepts the fact that when he makes a mistake. But having technical problems is something that you know, he probably really wants to rule out, and I really would like to see Kubica be able to carry his speed through a complete rally, because, you know, we all remember how McCrea used to be, and even how Chris Meek's been recently. You know, once he can crack that consistency, that continuity, if he can bring the speed through the rally, then, you know, he's as fast as anybody, and we need fast people in the WRC at the minute.
Absolutely. Listen, you've just touched upon something which I nearly forgot about, actually. Obviously, you've mentioned Chris and also Jari Matti. Both of them have kind of had a tough start to the season, I think it's fair to say. And Jari said apparently he's been relaxing and he's been watching McCrea on boards in order to get inspiration. Now, that surprised me, to be honest with you, because one thing that Jari has never lacked is that flamboyant style. If anything, he probably lacked that consistency, which sometimes dogged Colin as well. So I'm surprised that that's where he took his inspiration from.
Yeah, but maybe, like you say, maybe it's just inspiration he's looking for, because, as we know, Jari Matti's a deep thinker and a great guy, you know, a real character, if you like. He wears his heart on his sleeve when he's interviewed, but he does read into everything very deeply. He certainly thinks about everything very carefully, and maybe you could even say overthinks things, and you have to say that was one thing for Colin got in the car and drove it, and it's quite a change of mentality really for the Finns, because if you think back at the Kankanens and the Mäkinens and the Salonens, they all just got in a car and drove it. They didn't think about how they drove it. They drove it as fast as it would go to either finish the rally or it stopped. You know, they certainly didn't think too much about it. It was maybe the Latin drivers that thought a lot more about it. And even the French drivers, even the Orioles. But we've gone full circle now, and you've got French drivers full of confidence, and the Finns, you know, really thinking about what they're doing. And I think if Jari was looking for inspiration, it's probably that of just getting in the car and driving it.
Do you think he's... I hesitate to use the word intimidated, but it must be very, very difficult to have Ogier as your teammate. You know, the way Danny Sordo, to some degree, I guess, struggled having Loeb as a teammate, it must be... demoralising is probably too big a word to say, but it must be very, very tough to know that there is somebody in exactly the same car as you who is just blowing people away.
Yeah, I mean, inherently, you want to measure yourself against the best, and there's no better way to do that than an equal car. But having said that, if you have the world's best driver in that equal car and you're just struggling a little bit to match him, then definitely that's going to knock at your confidence, and that's probably what's making him think too much about it. Because over one stage, I mean, just watch the onboard with a Latvala and a Mark II Escort or a Quattro. I mean, we've all watched that YouTube footage, and he's absolutely awesome. The guy over one stage, when he's on it, is as fast as they come. But if that isn't happening stage in, stage out, which sometimes it isn't for him, he starts to think about it. And to me, as soon as I hear him come off the first stage or the third stage saying the feeling's not there, then it's game over for him. You know, we hear him talk about this feeling, and if he hasn't got the feeling, then suddenly he starts thinking about it, and he just doesn't get back on Ogier's pace. But if it works for him, then, you know, if he's having a good rally and he's on it from the start, then he can compete. But he does seem, you know, very confidence-led.
And do you think he can, I've spoke to people about this, and guys who, not necessarily sports psychologists, but people who work with drivers and riders. You know, I know guys that work with superbike riders and kind of sort them out, kind of thing. And you know, it's not amazing stuff that they do. It's not science. They just talk to them. And I know Yari Matti's had somebody similar working with him. But do you almost feel when when he starts talking about the feeling, it's almost like he's talking himself out of the result before it even happens?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as soon as he started talking about it, it's almost too late. Like I said, when he's in the zone, he doesn't talk about it. And when he's in the zone, he sets the times. But as soon as he does start feeling that the feeling isn't there, if you follow me, then that's when he seems to struggle. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because you could almost argue that Mikko Hirvonen was in the same boat to a certain degree. Mikko on his day was as fast as anybody. But again, Mikko sometimes just didn't seem to be in the groove, and again just didn't have the ultimate pace on those days where we've seen it time in, time out, an Ogier or a Loeb, stage in, stage out, whatever the surface, you know, they can just turn it on.
Absolutely. Well, one man who's going to turn it on is Ogier this weekend. If he wins this weekend, he matches Sebastian Loeb's 6 from 6. Do you think he's going to do it?
Well, you wouldn't. You'd be brave to bet elsewhere, wouldn't you? Let's face it. I mean, his speed is without question. His talent is without question. He's got arguably the best car. He's not won this event before, but I really think it's going to take an awesome drive by somebody else, or maybe a car issue to deprive him of another win. Having said that, we've just heard from Rich how tough the stages are, and that's what we need in WRC. We need a bit of a challenge, because the rallies have just become ultimate sprints. They've become, you know, absolute flat-out driving, and that wasn't always how it was. Yes, we see McRae, you know, his flamboyant style, but McRae knew how to win Safari. He knew how to win Acropolis, and he didn't win them by driving flat-out all the time, and it'd be nice to see a little bit of that challenge back in WRC, and hopefully maybe the rougher elements of this weekend's rally will give us some of that to a degree.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be one of the slowest events, I think, for some time, looking at it and looking at some of the pictures that have come back, and obviously from based on what Rich was saying. Listen, believe it or not, we're halfway through the programme. I told you it went really quick, didn't I? This is slightly parochial, and the reason why I'm going to ask Ryan about this, because we've got a lot of overseas listeners. I know there's a lot of guys who listen to us on the podcast, especially over in the Far East and things like that. So please forgive me, but I need to ask Ryan this question. There's also been a leaked report today with regards to the British Rally Championship, which is coming back. Now, you're a man who, certainly during my time in it, was always there. You drove various machinery there. And I just wouldn't mind getting your opinion on where we're at with it, really, and what you think needs to happen.
Ooh, tough one, that. I think credit where it's due. Mark Taylor tried his best and really tried to get the manufacturers back in over the last few years, and unfortunately that just didn't happen. We ended up with a one-mate championship with DS3s, really, because that was the R3 car of choice. And we just ended up in this vicious circle where we weren't getting the entries in and the interest wasn't there around the championship. So I guess a fresh pair of eyes is a good thing. It looks to be going to R5 and all the homologated cars below that, which, you know, we've talked about already. You know, there's some good British and Irish drivers with R5 cars in their hands. You know, we've seen a few of those drivers, some of them competing at WRC level, like Keith Cronin and Tom Cave. But, you know, it'd be nice to see those guys if they could do some WRC events, but maybe fit BRC in between. That'd be interesting.
Well, that's the BRC
thing that we never...
Sorry, Ryan, sorry to cut in there, because that's what the BRC always was. It was like a mini WRC.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the way it was. And that's why, you know, the likes of Jari Matti, funnily enough, and Mika Hirvonen, that's why they were sent here, you know, and there's many other Finnish drivers that don't even need to be named prior to them.
Yeah, and I think one thing that wasn't at fault with the British Championship was the rallies. And if we could have a similar mix of rallies, then I think that would be great, because I think that was one of the real draws for the Finns. We had some of the toughest tarmac rallies in the world, with the Manx Rally, with the Ulster Rally, and then latterly the Jim Clark. You know, we had a fantastic mix of tarmac rallies. And then we had some amazing gravel stages, you know, everything from obviously the twisty flowing stuff in Wales, the real fast challenging stuff of Kielder, Yorkshire, obviously very fast as well, and particularly close to my heart, and then the Scottish stages that were a bit rougher. But we had some fantastic terrain in the British Championship, and that's one thing I hope we still keep, because the rallies were incredible. But as you said, it would be great if we could have some of these young guys that have got R5 cars, you know, and Alistair Fisher, for argument's sake, who looks to be going down the R5 route, maybe not so much this year, but it'd be great to see him and Tom and, like I say, the Keith Cronins and the Robert Barables of this world doing some British Championship events to get up to speed for WRC.
Do you see where, and it's been mentioned in this supposed leak report, and I'm always hesitant when I mention the word leaked report, because sometimes I think things get let out because they needed to be let out or whatever. But there is there's a definite... a definite section on regards to one-make championships coming back. Now, I don't remember, and I think I've said this to you before when you were on Total Rally many, many years ago, I don't remember anybody who was more committed to one-make championships than you. You know, I seem to remember you in the Pumas, in the Evos, Peugeot 106s. You know, you basically did those championships, and it's not rocket science to figure out, because they are prize drives.
Absolutely, you know, and you can add the 205 championship.
Sorry, of course, yeah. Yeah.
But that was, you know, I started off in the 205 challenge, and at that time there were 60 205s on a rally. And, you know, if you were finishing in the top 10, you were going well. And it was just a fantastic yardstick. And, you know, the last year of the 205 challenge, there was myself, there was Justin Dale, Neil Simpson, Jock Armstrong, plus guys that had been and done the British Championship previously by then, the likes of Rudy Lancaster. But, you know, it was brilliant for measuring yourself. And whenever I tried to move on, it was always, you know, you always needed the money to step up. And I always found myself stepping back to a one-mate championship because, as you said, there was prize money and ultimately a prize drive. And if you won the championship, you got the drive at the end of it, you know, and that's how I was lucky enough to do the British Championship in a Super 1600 Puma and be with the Works Mitsubishi team. You know, it was always sort of earned, I guess, if you like, through the prize drive in the one-mate championship. And there's no better way, firstly, of proving yourself as a driver, but secondly, doing rallying for a reasonably cost-effective price where you can win some money back again.
Do you see any manufacturers getting involved in a one-make championship these days?
Well, I keep hearing talk of Peugeot coming back to do something. Obviously, it's a very different company in the UK to what it was at that time. And, you know, at that time, the manufacturers made it pay for themselves. I think probably as M Sport have done a little bit, you know, like an R2 program really pays for itself. And if a manufacturer was willing to introduce a one-make championship, probably with an R2 car, if they supported it well enough, they'd probably find that the business they could do is buying parts, and selling cars, and etc. would would really help to offset it. So they help boost their profile, but it's subsidised as well. So it's a great way of going forward. And let's hope Peugeot obviously still interested in the sport in the UK, back in Chris Ingram now. So let's hope they are still looking at it, and that would be great if they did come back with a one world championship.
Fantastic. I couldn't agree more. Ryan, I've had you for 35 minutes. It's been wonderful, but this is where I'll let you go now, because I said I was only going to have you 20 minutes and I feel like I'm taking up your evening now. I know your other half's there and little fella's there, so I'm quite guilty now, because obviously I know Gemma's getting ready to do a rally herself this weekend. She's co-driving this week on the Pirelli rally, and you're there holding the baby, quite literally.
Well, they're actually going through their personal notes and watching DVDs and things like that as we speak. So all the things that we've done, you know, when you've been shot in a recce, the best thing you've got to do is sit in front of your TV screen and watch it in two dimensions, and that's what they're doing as we speak.
Fantastic. Well, listen, have a great weekend. Pass my best on and best wishes on to Gemma. Say hello to Finlay for me as well, and thank you for being our guest host, and hopefully you will come back again soon, because you're a lot more knowledgeable than me. I think that's the most important thing that we've established throughout this conversation. But I really do appreciate it, Ryan, and thanks again for joining us tonight on Total Rally.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, mate. See you soon. And that was Ryan Champion. And again, I was only going to pinch Ryan for kind of 20 minutes as a guest host, but he just knows his stuff, and he's very, very helpful in getting a few bits and pieces for us today. So listen, we're going to have a quick break, and then we're going to come back with WRC co-driver Craig Parry.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
Welcome to Total Rally, Craig Parry.
Good evening.
How are you?
Not too bad, yourself?
I'm all right. Hey, listen, the reason why I wanted to have you, obviously you're a superstar co-driver now as well, but we had the man with the greatest name in rallying at the moment, as far as I'm concerned, Dylan Van Wey, as a guest of Bill Woods last week on our special pre-record programme, which was a kind of North American special. Now, you ended up going out to co-drive on that event over in Mexico. What's the story with this R2 championship over there?
Yeah, I did. I went to just fill in for Andrew Edwards, who was unable to make the first round. It hasn't had a great deal of coverage from this side of the water, unfortunately. But basically, it's a guy called Mats Hamlund racing, and he's in based in Mexico as well. And he's basically tried to start the championship up himself to sort of mirror what M Sport have been doing in the World Championship with the DMAC Fiesta Trophy, and just tried to take it to South America, basically. It's very new. We turned up with all the cars. He's got five competitors there at the moment, with six cars available, but only five taken. Six rounds, I believe, with the prize of doing WRC Mexico in our 5 car, or to go and have the entry paid to do the Drive DMAC Fiesta Trophy in 2016 and the World Championship.
Wow. Are DMAC involved in that championship over there as well? Are they supplying the tyres for that?
Yeah, they're supplying the tyres. M Sport are supplying some backing, I believe. They're not... I don't believe they're fully behind it like they are with the World Championship, but as far as parts and sort of logistical bits go, they're there. They're obviously overseeing it as well, because it's the brand of the Fiesta, the R2 car, which they're using from last year. So, yeah, they have got a small involvement.
Fantastic. What's the standard like over there, Craig? Because we're hearing different things. Certainly rallying in North America, we're going to be talking to Mike Shaw very shortly over there, actually, about the Oregon Trail Rally this coming weekend. But what's the standard like over in Mexico? Because I'm assuming there must be a splatterings of drivers from all over the world.
It's basically still relatively small, I'd say. I mean, you know, this, like the rally we did the weekend there, they had 27 competitors and I think 14 finished. So, you know, this particular rally was quite tough. I don't know what the rest of the events are like because I've not really seen any of them or done any of them. And there's quite a mixture of cars as well. I mean, you generally get the top guys that are in, you know, good bits of machinery, like all the latest spec Evo 10s were pretty much leading the field. Not so much a Subaru base either, which we were quite surprised about. It's all Mitsubishi. And then you get the latter part of the field, which is all sorts of things. I mean, they had like a small KA challenge there, which were basically box standard KAs running at the back, and there was some Renault Clios and some Peugeot 206s and stuff. So it's a variation of things.
Okay. So obviously you were acting as a substitute co-driver on that particular event. I'd love to. How does that conversation normally go down?
Well, it usually starts with, "Are you available?" So yeah, it was basically came from a friend of mine, Daniel Barrett, who knows Clint Fast, who basically is sort of running Dylan, and then it just went from there, really. I was available for the rally, so out we went. And it can also be a little bit of a unnerving thing to go with a driver you've never been before, but obviously I know Andrew quite well, so I got a few little bits of reassurance off him that Dylan was a talented driver and not somebody who's just a crazy driver. So that sort of set you at ease. And then we had like a day before the recce as well, just to go through notes and that sort of thing, just to get acquainted with his system and him and the car as well. And then everything else just sort of goes in the motions, really. I mean, pretty much all the rallies are very similar in regards to your preparation and stuff, so you kind of just go with the motions.
Listen, you don't realise how famous you are. We've had a question for you on Twitter.
Oh.
I know. This is from Duncan McFarlane. Ask Craig, this is kind of quite apt where we were going to go next, actually, but ask Craig, do you think Gareth McHale had the ability to go all the way? Was it fourth in Mexico we got, then a big off somewhere? Were you sat with him then, was you?
I was. I wasn't sat with him in Mexico, but I was with him later on. I think Paul Nagel was with him with the WRC stuff, and then I sat with him in 2008, and unfortunately I had quite a big accident with Gareth and broke my back in the process, which put me out for, I think it was 37 weeks.
Wow.
But yeah, Gareth was, again, another talented driver from Ireland. And I suppose, I don't really know what the story was with Gareth, why they didn't keep pursuing what they were doing in the World Championship. I should imagine finance was probably the cause of that, as it is with many other drivers.
Yeah, catches up. But
unfortunately, yeah.
Speaking of South America, you're a man that's actually co-drove on Rally Argentina, and obviously it's Rally Argentina this weekend. Now, we had Rich Milner on the phone earlier from the service park, who's saying that some of the stages have been cut short because of heavy rain and things like that. What were your memories of going into Rally Argentina?
Nerve-wracking, if I'm honest with it. Never been there before, never been to sort of South America either, so yeah, it was all very, very new. But I do remember we did have a dry rally there, but what we had as well was the organisers decided that it would be a good idea to do a super special in Buenos Aires, so they flew everybody down, and if I remember rightly, I think there was a massive thunderstorm that came in that night and delayed everybody, so we actually couldn't fly back, so they actually had to cancel the first day of the rally while they got the cars and everybody back up to Carlos Paz. So we actually started on the second day, I think.
Was that, were you that was with Stuart Jones, wasn't it, in the Evo?
That's correct, in 2007, yeah.
Yeah. And we won't ask what happened to Mick Jones while he was over there. That's a story for another day and for a bar probably, but still, there you go. Bless him, I love Mick to bits. I've not seen him for years, but bless him. But obviously, I know you're friends with Dan Barrett and stuff, but I'm assuming you've not spoke to him. Listening to Rick's there, apparently, you know, they have been quite shocked about the quality, well, not the quality of the stage, but just how affected the stages are now. How as a co-driver, when you've got, obviously, you know, you're prepared for a rally, and then obviously when you go out and do the recce, it's almost completely changes the event that you're expecting to do. How does that kind of change your mindset?
Well, it's not just the co-drivers, it's the drivers as well. I mean, if you've done the recce and everything looks okay, and then you get to the rally and everything's changed completely, then you know you have to almost adjust everything to your pace notes, because everything changes, and obviously the driving styles and everything have to change. And again, it just puts that element in of why we probably all go rallying, just because it's the unknown, and I wouldn't say it adds a little bit of excitement to it, but it can certainly put you on a little bit of an edge, you know.
Which keeps you sharp. Anyway, what's Craig Parry plans for this year then? Because we did speak at Autosport and you were part of the programme then. Has anything moved along? Have you got a little bit more firmer dates now?
Yeah, there's obviously still the Middle East stuff with the Citroen Junior guys. That's still going ahead. Next rally with them is not till October, unfortunately, which will be Jordan.
Wow.
But we will have hopefully some stuff being announced this week. I can't really say a great deal about it because it's only just come together, but it'll all be...
Yeah, of course you'll tell us first, won't you, Craig?
Oh, 100%.
Hey, listen, mate, I really do appreciate the fact that we've grabbed you at home, we've rang you at home and everything else, because you're another one. We've just been speaking to Ryan Champion, who's now got a little man, and you've got a little one not far away, I'm assuming.
Yeah, he's due to be with us in just under 6 weeks.
Wow. Another one to the rally family.
Well, we'll see.
Hey, listen, mate, thanks again for joining us. I just wanted to have a quick catch up and obviously keep everybody in the loop of what it's like to go and co-drive and rally Argentina, and B, to co-drive for the man with the coolest name in rallying, Dylan Bamway. Listen, we'll catch.
Cool guy as well. Huh?
Well, I know. I listened to. He was on our show last week when we had Bill on doing kind of an American special last week. So I was listening to that program when we were in the studio, and I thought, and I heard him mention Andrew Edwards, and then I seen that I'd seen some stuff on Facebook that you've been co-driving. I thought Parry's there. Mm-hmm. How's that happened? We've got to find out more. Hence the call. Listen, mate, I'll leave you a be, and listen, we'll catch you up very soon again. Thanks a lot for tonight.
No problem. Thank you, mate.
See you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Good night.
And that was my friend Craig Parry. It's always quite nice to kind of have your friends on, isn't it? But we're going to have friends of the show now, and I think he'll probably be a friend of mine as well at some point. And we've not spoke before. He does regularly get involved with the programme, so we are going to try and get Mike Shaw now from Oregon Wings, and he's got a great profile photograph. Not seen that profile photograph before, so let's just see whether we've got Mike Shaw joining us now. Mike, welcome to Total Rally.
Hello, Tony Simpson. How are you doing across the pond there?
We're doing really good. It's exceptionally warm in the TARDIS tonight. For those of you who didn't listen to the very early shows, our studio is in a TARDIS, and it's very, very muggy in here. That's all I'll say. But it's not about me tonight, Mike. It's about the Oregon Trail Rally. Tell us all about it.
Oh, the Oregon Trail Rally. Well, I can give you a little bit of history here, if you'd like. Really, it kind of started way back in 1984, was kind of the first one that was put together. It was the Portland Motor Club. This is actually based out of a major metropolitan city, which is kind of the only one that's done that way in the Rally America Championship. But way back then, 1984 was just kind of a one-off event, and we had an Englishman, Nick Moore, that was the head of the Portland District Motor Club and wanted to put this thing on, and the winner was none other than John Buffum in an Audi Quattro. He was followed closely by Kiwi Rod Millen. So those are all names we're all very familiar with, of course. Then it kind of went by the wayside and was resurrected in 1995 by a group of diehard U.S. rally fans. And most of those guys are actually still involved with the organization of the event today. It's really fun to talk to those guys. They've got stories to tell, let me tell you.
So tell us about what you get involved with. Obviously, we know about your publication, and which is one that regularly retweets Total Rally stuff. Thank you very much. But tell us about your involvement with the Oregon Trail, and obviously you're involved with the North American Rally Championship.
Well, you know, I obviously like to try and just, you know, get the knowledge of rally out there as much as I can. I'm with openpaddock.net is the website that I kind of help manage, and we cover a number of different motorsports, but my passion has always been rally. Growing up here in the Pacific Northwest, where, you know, it's all forest and logging roads, I remember driving those as a kid when I first learned how to drive, and next thing you know, people race on these things, and you're going, wow, that's the coolest thing ever. And so I got involved with just trying to help promote it and trying to help just push the knowledge, and then volunteering. The last 4 years, I've been volunteering for the event, and moved myself this year into kind of a captain's role. We're going to try and do something new this year with trying to get some live timing at the stage ends. There's very weak cell signal there, but we're going to try and do a texting method to get unofficial times anyways, posted out there on the web through the Oregon Trail Rally, at Oregon Trail Rally on Twitter. You'll be able to follow that stuff there. And try and get a little more immediacy to the excitement of what's going on out on the stages, because that's one of the challenges, of course, out here with, you don't get that immediacy when they have to organize all the times and take them back to the service park, and, you know, 2 hours later you get what stage times are. It takes a little bit out of the excitement, so we want to build that back up.
So there's been a bit of a rallycross style jump being added. I was reading some bits and pieces before, and there's been a rallycross style jump. What's the thought process behind that?
It's a 3-day event. So this is the only 3-day event on the calendar. The first day is at Portland International Raceway, and they do a combination of being on the racetrack surface as well as using some of the gravel access roads on the outside of the racetrack. And to add a little bit of excitement, they put in what they're calling a little yump, a little jump in there. It's pretty small this year, just to see how it goes. I mean, we've got so many different cars of different classes, you know, that you don't want to break somebody's vehicle on the first day of a rally, right? So we're just going to kind of see how it goes this year, and see if we can make it a little bigger next year. But it's kind of just an idea they threw out there. Plus, they're setting up these this roundabout barrels, and they're going to have to do donuts around that kind of Gymkhana style before they go down to that little yump.
So. I wonder where the inspiration came from for that, Mike.
Well, you know, Ken Block has been a frequenter of our event. He's not there this year, unfortunately. But
So very quickly, because as ever on Total Rally, we are always pushed for time, Mike. Obviously, David Higgins is car one, I'm assuming, away from this event. Where do you see the challenge coming from for David? Because obviously, David's had pretty much all his own way. Where do you see the challenges coming from?
You know, I think David's only challenge these days right now is, you know, whatever's in his own mind. You know, the closest to him is probably going to be David Sterics. He's moved into the open class just this year from having a super production car, and he's won super production the last 3 years straight. And he's probably going to be the closest to him. If not, it'll be Adam Yeoman in the FY Racing team. And of course, you all know that we've got Brenton Kelly with Niall Burns.
Yeah, we've had Brenton on very, very briefly, and Niall, we know Niall listens to the show. Good evening, Niall, or good day. It must be, what time is it there?
It's day here. Now, the other one that's going to be very interesting is going to be Chris Duplessis with Alex Kiriani. Chris is getting back in the championship with a special GT86. It's actually
we featured him. He did a piece with Chris with Bill Wood, and Alex co-drove for one of my ex-teammates over here in the European Championship, Alex Papotas, in a Fiesta R2. So I didn't realize Alex Carney was going back over to the States.
Yes, he's actually on a plane right now and on his way here. Those guys, the car that they have has so much power. Even though it's a rear-wheel drive vehicle, they are planning on that being on the overall podium, not just winning two-wheel drive. That's their goal.
Wow.
So it'll be exciting to see how that goes. You know, getting back to David Higgins, what I think would be interesting there is his car is new this year versus last year, but it's got about 40 less horsepower because of the restrictor they were required to put on this time. And the stages are the same, and the conditions look similar to last year. So it'll be interesting to compare stage times, last year's car versus this year's car. So okay. He's not going to be pushed by Travis Pastrana or Ken Block this time. So you got that kind of going against you, but I think it'll be kind of fascinating there. And you know who Rhianna Gelsomino, yes?
Yeah.
That's you know, Alex Gelsomino's wife.
Yeah.
She co-drives for Nick Roberts, and what'll be interesting for them is to see if they actually can finish the Big Boy 2 stage. It's stage 8. Nick Roberts has had a few issues trying to finish this rally when he's come visited. He said by earth, air, and fire, he's had issues, and last year they had a very scary fire. Rhianna got burned a little bit, but she's, you know,
yeah,
recovering okay. Nick went off the jump the year before that too hard, and there's a little... it goes over a drainage ditch. They jumped in the air, and he went off and rolled the car. So, earth, wind, fire, I guess they've had. Hopefully no rain this year.
They've had it all. Listen, Mike, we are going to have to cut you short. We're 1 minute to the news. It's been great having you on, and we will have you on again. Sorry it's a short one, but it always is when we get towards the end of Total Rally. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll grab you again if that's okay with you.
Sure, we'll cover what happened. How about that?
That'll be ace. Thanks so much.
Right.
Bye-bye. And that, my friends, as ever, is the end of a busy Total Rally. Just for those who were wondering how we got on, by the way, we did the Somerset stages of BTRDA national event over here last weekend. We got a cheeky 50th overall out of a decent field. I'm quite happy with that. We won our class, and we had a good battle with another young man in a Fiesta ST, and I wish him very best of luck, because unfortunately he was looking a little bit sick, and bless him, when it was getting to the end of that rally. So we'll take that anyway. But listen, it's been wonderful to have all our guests. I thank Ryan Champion as our guest host, and I also thank Rich Milner for joining us, Craig Parry, and of course the wonderful Mr. Mike Shaw. Listen, it's always better live, and we will be back live next week again, live on Total Rally. And again, thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you again very, very, very soon. Good night, God bless. My name's been Tony Simpson. You know where we live, at Total Rally or at Tony Simpson 74.